This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of trade deadline coverage for you on this Wednesday evening, covering everything that happened in the NHL leading up to today's 2 p.m. deadline. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. Joining us on the show this evening in about 40 minutes' time from the Vancouver province, Jim Jameson is going to join us to talk about the situation in Vancouver, a situation that has somehow just been absolutely boggled by Mike Gillis, and the fact he's still employed today surprises me. And I don't know how much longer it's going to happen for.
Yeah, you know, I'm not so sure, Drew. I'm surprised he's employed today, but I think that I would be somewhat surprised. I know he has a very good relationship with Francesco Aquilini, the owner of the Canucks, but I would be fairly surprised if he was general manager come the beginning of next season. Mm-hmm. You know, I would put the chances at about 50-50. I don't think it's a for sure that he gets...
Really?
This is what I say, Drew. This is my opinion on all that. If you don't believe in your general manager, if you don't believe he's the guy, then you do not let him make the big moves. You don't let him trade Luongo, and you don't let him possibly trade Kessler today. That's my perspective on it. If you don't believe in the general manager, he shouldn't be making those moves. So you're suddenly going to decide in the summer. Maybe in the summer you decide, after taking everything into account, that you don't want him there anymore. But I always find that to be odd, because you should know before any big trades are made.
I can't believe that he'll still be there. I mean, maybe they are as close, and that's going to override everything else. But the way he's bungled that situation in the past 18 months is really something to behold.
It is really incredible. And with the trade, if you look at it, Schneider and Luongo traded for Bo Horvat, Jakob Markstrom, and Sean Mathias.
Yeah.
And it's what do you say to that? You could argue that Luongo and Schneider are both top 10, top 15 netminders in the National Hockey League. Certainly you could put forth that argument. But I think it's, regardless of that, just strictly talent trade and goalies and how you value goalies and all that stuff, the distractions that have emanated out of Vancouver, not only with Luongo, Ezzie, and Schneider for, 2-3 years, you have Kessler now.
Mm-hmm.
He's already tweeting, like Luongo,
yeah,
after not getting traded today. And now you're back to that. Is Kessler going to be that distraction for the remainder of the year?
Well, you know what? We'll talk about Vancouver later on in the show. But, you know, to the point, I don't think Roberto Luongo was ever a distraction in the dressing room. But I'm not sure that Ryan Kessler won't be.
I think in any event, Drew, it's a distraction. If it's inside or outside, it's on people's minds. Yes.
Well, yeah, and I know Drew wants to talk about it later, but it's the timing. It's the way that the Canucks have completely fallen out of the playoff race. And as Richie mentioned, the fact that Kessler has the opportunity to be such a distraction, not only around this trade deadline, which has just passed, but for the rest of the season and in the off season, because we know that Ryan Kessler was rumored to be very close to moving to Pittsburgh, and other teams were interested, and everything around the Canucks, guys. And I know you want to talk Jets and all the other trades today, Drew, but just quickly, everything that's happened with the Canucks, it's just gone from bad to worse. And it's unfortunate Luongo gets to go back to Florida. But right now, it's the way things are trending right now for Vancouver, it's not looking very good. There's not a lot of happy people, I think, in that organization right now.
And we'll talk to Jim Jameson of the Vancouver province about that coming up in about 35 minutes' time. But like you said, let's talk and start with the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets were one of three teams today to do absolutely nothing at the trade deadline. The Jets, of course, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the San Jose Sharks. You know, how surprised are you that the Jets didn't end up dealing any of their players, be them, you know, players who are under contract or the pending unrestricted free agents? And how much do you think that the decision to not do anything has to do with the injury suffered by Mark Scheifele last night against the New York Islanders?
It probably has a fair amount to do with the Scheifele injury, Drew, because it changes, you know, the outlook for the team as, right? Like, it changes what you think you can do if you don't have Scheifele. I didn't think they were necessarily going to do too much if they had Scheifele in their lineup. I'm almost surprised they didn't trade maybe a lower-end draft pick, as just to fill the NHL roster spot of Scheifele, in the sense that you don't really have any NHL bodies to replace him. And you can't do the whole, you know, Tangrady's thing day to day, but the whole Tangrady, Paluso, all that stuff. Maybe you needed to go out there and just trade a fourth rounder for a guy who could play, you know, on your third or fourth line and just give you, to solidify that.
Marcel Gotch out of Florida.
That was a third and a fifth, yeah. And I don't know if they're going to do that, and they did trade Trafics for Setoguchi and Frolik. But I guess I understand that point. Somebody of that ilk may have made sense just because you need more NHL bodies to compete with, say, Phoenix, who adds Zeret, and Dallas, who adds Thomas. Again, not significant moves, but moves that don't hurt your cause by any means. Maybe in Phoenix's case, they turn Zeret around. Thomas won't play many games, but his games will likely be an upgrade over Dan Ellis, who he was traded for.
Yeah.
So taking all that into account, I'm slightly surprised, but you have to qualify that by saying that Kevin Sheveldev is not an active general manager when it comes to trades, so the expectations were not high in terms of movement.
And Richie, we talked about this Saturday. We didn't expect the Jets to make many moves, mm-hmm. if any, and they didn't make any moves last year. Scheifele changes things quite a bit, and Chris Thorburn's day-to-day, you mentioned Tangrady, but the Winnipeg Jets were in a difficult position in the sense that they're only a couple of points out of a playoff spot right now. They're not in a situation right now where they have that many players that they were actively seeking to move. Setoguchi was the one, and not surprised at all. And the Jets are going to have to call up some guys from the AHL. They haven't done that yet, but they have to because they don't have a lot of bodies. Well, Mark Scheifele is out for the regular season, most likely, and that means that Olli Jokinen moves up to the second-line center, and most likely Jim Slater will have to move up. They don't have a lot of natural NHL-ready centers ready to go. So in that case, yeah, maybe you'd expect them to maybe acquire someone, like we said, for a draft pick, and they didn't. And it's going to be tough. Mark Scheifele losing him the way he was playing, it's a significant blow for the Jets. Everybody knows that. But like Richie said, we didn't think that with Scheifele they were going to make any moves. And really, just finding out this morning, Richie, that Scheifele was going to be out for the rest of the regular season didn't give them a lot of time. And you know, you can't really fault Chevy that much for not making any moves because we didn't expect many moves from him.
I can't fault him, and I mean, I don't think it's not a life or death matter. But I'm surprised that they decided to hold on to Devin Setoguchi. You know, it's one thing to really rock the boat at this point in time. You're fighting for that last playoff spot and everything else. But I mean, just he's been so insignificant for your team, and you probably could have recouped something for him. Now we don't know what San Jose.
You can't trade him though, Drew, because you have no way to replace him with. So it has to be, you have to make a move essentially. You know, concurrently, you have to be trading one and getting something back, and then trading that to get. You can't have to lose two NHL roster. You can't lose two NHL roster players without replacing them when you're, a point, two binds points behind the playoffs.
I get that, but he had been so. I mean, I don't want to say that he'd been so invisible as this quote unquote NHL quality NHL player.
As in respect of your expectations for him.
Yeah.
But in respect of the expectations for anybody else, it hasn't been that bad. I appreciate that. Don't get me wrong. I'm one of his harshest critics based upon his lack of effort, in my opinion, over the course of the season, most nights. But you can't trade him. If you lose Scheifele, you can't trade two-ninths of your, one-third of your top. That's not one-third.
That's not one-third.
Two-ninths of your top three lines. You can't do that because you're still competing for a playoffs. And who are the people in the – what are the people in the room going to say?
You know what? I don't know that there would have been as much blowback as you think.
Hold on. If you got Chris Thorburn,
yeah,
and James Wright, or whoever it is, or Slater, with due respect, on the third line, and you're going up against LA tomorrow night, and you're going up against Ottawa, then Colorado, and all that stuff.
I get your point, but is Devin Setoguchi doing anything to tip the balance in your favor?
He's better than Chris Thorburn in that spot, and I love the way Chris Thorburn brings to the roster. But he's not a sniper. I mean, Devin Setoguchi can still shoot. So you had to have traded him and got something back, or traded him and got another part of. If you were 5 or 6 points back, you deal him.
Right.
But you still have. There's something. This is the thing. They've made the effort to try and make the playoffs here.
Mm-hmm. And they've got right back in the race. So kudos to them for that.
Then they have to, at least, if they're not going to follow through and adding somebody, you can't just deplete the roster.
Well, I would think that if you're not going to deplete it, then you need to add to it. I think you need to go out and get somebody to... Obviously, you're not going to get a second-line center because the cost is going to be too high. But you move over...
I don't think the cost was actually particularly high. I just don't think the Jets ought to have acted on it. But I don't think the high... Nobody went for a first-round pick this year, guys.
You're right. You're right. So it wasn't that high.
Aside from St. Louis, different situation.
Right.
Vanek, Molson, all those guys, no first-round picks.
You're right. So you know, you move Jokinen up to the second-line center. And if you're still going for it... Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you are, and you're right in the race. And, I mean, I know that Dallas added Tim Thomas, but they didn't do anything that's,
to their,
you know, that's earth-shattering. Yeah. Then how do you not replace what Mark Scheifele by getting a third-line center? A third-line center that was available. I mean, you look around, you know, third-line centers were available, and they weren't that expensive. And I know you've spent draft picks to get Devin Setoguchi and Michael Frolik at the draft last year. But, you know, you can't be half-pregnant, you know, is sort of my opinion. You're either in it... and you're going to add to replace the guy who unfortunately got injured, or you're not in it, and you're going to dump the guy who's not that good for you anyways and is going to be leaving at the end of the year.
Right, and I'd have to think that Kevin Cheveldayoff and the management staff were aware of this, and I imagine that they were talking to other GMs and trying to do it, and they obviously didn't. Nothing worked out. And if the asking price was a draft pick before Mark Scheifele went down, maybe it was higher for them, and they would have thrown something else in, but... Sure, I think they would have liked to acquire something for the end of the season, but they didn't. So you'd have to ask Chevy why ultimately they didn't, because we don't have the answer to that.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at guys to add, I mean, the guys I look at is, are you adding in a Vern Fiddler? You mentioned Marcel Gotch, but Fiddler's not going from Dallas to Winnipeg when they're competing for a playoff spot.
Right.
Hold on. So, I mean, it's a limited market of guys who can play center on your depth lines, right? And I look at Brian Boyle. The Rangers, based on the St. Louis trade, aren't trading Brian Boyle, who's a pending UFA. I'm just going off pending UFAs here. So, I mean, these are the kind of guys I'm thinking that you're likely going to try and add or want to add. You know, maybe you thought for a fourth that you could have added Dustin Penner to solidify their left wing yesterday. Okay, I can hear that argument. I certainly don't love Dustin Penner by any means, but I can hear adding an NHL player to try and make up for it, but you ideally want to add a center.
Yeah, and look, it's a lot easier for me to sit here after the fact and say, why didn't you do this and why didn't you do that? But it seems to me that, you know, it's a second straight year with no action at the trade deadline. And again, you're going to lose guys in the offseason. A guy that you traded a second round pick to acquire. He hasn't been very good for you. He's not one of your key guys, even though he plays in your top nine. And you're going to lose him 20 games from now. Maybe you make the playoffs, maybe you don't. I think with given the Mark Scheifele injury, you probably don't make the playoffs now. You're going to lose him for nothing, and ultimately 20 games from now, what have you got, what benefit has he provided for holding on to him?
I guess the other question, Drew, is if you're 1 point out of the playoffs, which they are right now, 1 point out of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And you have, I mean, what were you getting for Setoguchi? And I was, if you're 5 points out of the playoffs, it doesn't matter what you're getting, you trade him.
Right.
If you're 1 point out of the playoffs, there's that the revenue, the possibility of revenue from the playoff gates. Some people say it's $10 million in the first round if you play four games. I mean, I don't know, but it is 2.5 a game. I don't know. But it's a lot. So that's a factor as well. But I appreciate that you think... I think it wouldn't have hurt to have traded a lower round draft pick. And, you know, people talk about draft picks like they're so valuable. And don't get me wrong. You're preaching to the choir if you're telling me draft picks are valuable. But when you talk about fourth, fifth, sixth round picks, Ezzy, I mean... the value is limited in those regards, and I think the fans who always preach it, I just wanted to know if they can tell me the last four fourth round picks of the franchise, because they likely can't. I mean, it's difficult, and those guys don't always turn out. So there's a cost benefit there. But if you're talking about flipping third, seconds, or first based on this roster, maybe with a strong argument based on the return, you could convince me on a third in a weak draft like this year, but not in a second or first. And especially not next year.
Right. I'm not advocating that they should have given up anything in the first two rounds. I can see it both ways, and I can totally accept the argument that they're better off holding on to him and making the run for the next 20 games. And I'm fine with that had they chosen to do that if they had supplemented it to fill the spot with Scheifele's injury. And we'll talk about the roster. I don't know if we'll get to it tonight, but definitely on Saturday's show, we'll talk about how do you fill that third-line center role for the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, Jim Slater's going to fill it.
Right. And then
there's nobody else to fill it.
Yeah. Well, that's
and he's played third line center before on the GST line.
Right.
But then who's your fourth line? It's going to be Odell. Who's it going to be? It's going to be Wright.
Mm-hmm.
You're thin up the middle before the injury, guys. You're not strong up the middle before the injury. So this is a very difficult injury to stomach.
Right. Mark Stewart's contract. He signs a contract extension with the team. It's a four-year deal. It's worth $10.5 million. After the break, we'll do it?
Yeah.
Okay, you're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past 6 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, we were talking right before the break, the Jets, about the Jets and the moves that they made over the course of today's NHL trade deadline. One of them wasn't a trade, rather it was a contract extension, and that was handed out to Mark Stewart of the Winnipeg Jets, the Jets defenseman, of course. He signs a four-year contract extension worth $2.5 million. It's an average annual value of $2.625 million per year. A slight raise on the $1.7 million he was making per season that was set to expire on July 1st. Mark Stewart, your thoughts on him as a $2.625 million defenseman?
I love the move. I'm a big fan of Mark Stewart, as you guys know, and he's had a good year this year, and we know he wears an A on his jersey, and it's a good contract. He gets 4 years. I'm a little bit surprised that he got that much, but I'm fine with it. And he's playing on the second pair here with Jacob Trouba, and he's done an excellent job. And he's a guy that he has always asked, he's always done what's asked of him. And it's a nice move. That was the one thing that we can talk about that the Jets did. But, you know, Mark Stewart is a guy that we've seen. He'll put himself in front of any shot. He's one of the most fearless shot blockers in the NHL. So it's excellent. It's nice to have him under contract. He's been a great mentor for Jacob Trouba. So I really like the contract.
I think when you look at Mark Stewart, before I comment on the numbers, when you look at Mark Stewart, and as he mentions, in mentoring Jacob Trouba and how excited Jacob Trouba would be that he's coming back for a few years, when you talk about the city and wanting to be in Winnipeg, and you talk about his role in terms of leadership and toughness and all those other things, a lot of those things cannot be quantified, but provide a lot of value. I think Mark Stewart's improved his play a lot. Like during the early part of the year, he was playing as a 6 or 7 guy, mm-hmm. and you know he's stepped up into play a top four role. And again, playing over his head, but doing a respectable job about it. Ideally, he's going to be on your third pairing. He's going to be the guy that you rely on for the things that I just mentioned. And you're going to be in good shape with your defense because you have a fair amount of skill on your defense. You need to secure, and we've talked about this, Ezzy, your top four. You need to get that second left side defenseman, your number two left side defenseman, or even number one and push Enstrom down, whatever you want to do, in the offseason. That has to be a priority. You push Stewart down to the number three slot. You're fine with it. In terms of the numbers, before the season, after the Grant Clipsom contract, and Remus can tweet out this article, I did an analysis of defense money in the National Hockey League. What does the average first defenseman get paid? This is based on ice time, so it's a simple study, but I think it does shed some light. What does a first defenseman get paid? What does a second defenseman get paid? Third, fourth, through seventh.
Right.
And the third defenseman average pay, based on last year's numbers, was $3.12 million. And a fourth defenseman's average pay was $2.19 million.
You mean, when you say fourth defenseman, you mean like one through four, not fourth pairing, right?
Right. I mean, like, yes, exactly. Okay. So I mean, like one, two, three, four. So the fourth defenseman on a team.
Yeah.
And the third defenseman on a team. So he's getting paid basically right in the middle of a third defenseman and a fourth defenseman. So if you do it based on that analysis, now he's a UFA, and this doesn't take into account contract status and all those other things.
And a rising salary cap as well.
Right, exactly. So there's many factors here, and it's a simplistic analysis, as I've mentioned, but I think it does provide a nice framework. Is he a little bit overpaid for what he is? Probably, but not. But I think taking the other factors into account, not especially. You know, if I had to guess the number, it would have been, you take out agent, team, reasonable number, I would have said, okay, you know, 2.25 for 3 years, so something like that. So, you know, 3 years, 6.75 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That he gets 2.6, 2.6, to me isn't a huge issue. The surprising part is the extra year. I'm surprised he got 4 years, just based on, you know, his talent level and based on the way he plays, sometimes it's unpredictable for how a tough guy will fare.
Sure, he plays so hard that he might begin to slide in terms of the quality.
Maybe,
of his play.
But he's 29 years old too. So I mean, all in all, I wouldn't say necessarily overpay. It's an extra year more than I would have thought was market, but I do like the fact that that they're bringing him back, and I do like what he brings to the team. So a contract like this isn't going to kill you. It's a look at Grant Clipson, God. It's the contracts, the big contracts that you hand out. It's Dustin Byfuglien not providing enough value for his money, or more importantly, some other big signing that you make that doesn't work out. Those are the ones that kill you, not something like this.
Not when it's $2.6 million. The salary cap is skyrocketing. It's going to be up to $70 million next year.
But some people don't think that, by the way, Drew.
Really?
Yeah, some people are saying, some GMs apparently are saying that they don't expect it to be as high as some people that has been reported. Maybe even $67, $68 million. And I think part of that is based upon the Canadian dollar.
Sure, because as the Canadian dollar drops, it does affect, obviously, the league revenues.
We expect it to be higher, but it's not going to be, exponentially higher.
Well, right. But even at $68 million, a $2.6 million contract is never going to be... It's not, you look around, it's sort of almost any contract, for the most part, that was signed by a younger player, a UFA, or an RFA before the lockout isn't going to kill you, because it's just not that. The salary cap's rising so quickly for the most part that you look at the Jets contracts there.
I just don't like the comment that every contract that's signed, well, the salary cap's rising. Well, it's rising for everybody,
right?
But you still have to sign a contract in context.
Sure, you have to sign it in context, but you look at the Winnipeg Jets, and at no point in time are you going to look. It's not a David Clarkson deal.
No, but they do pay. That's exactly right. But they do pay a lot of money to the back enders.
Yeah, they do.
And I know Byfuglien's playing wing right now, so you got Trouba on the entry level, but you're paying still Klitsam, Stewart, Enstrom, Bogosian right now.
Yeah.
Are not cheap.
No. And next year you're going to have, just under $5 million locked up in probably your in what you hope are your bottom pairing left side defensemen. That being, Stewart and Klitsam, because you figure both of them are,
I think you're talking about, they probably like what they have in Ellerby.
Yeah.
More than like with Klitsam.
Well, the problem is, they're not going to get out from under the Klitsam deal. Not that it's going to kill you again, because it's only $2 million.
Right, but it wasn't a good deal.
It wasn't a good deal when it was signed. He had one good year. He was injured this year, and when he played, he struggled. So, it's hard to, again, though, it's a $2 million. It's not going to be an albatross that hangs over your roster for years to come. Tell you what, let's go to break. When we come back, I want to do the rest of the Central Division and what they did in the trade deadline. And then we got Jim Jameson coming up at 6:40 this evening. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
6:30 in the evening here on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg join me here in studio. Going to start looking at the Central Division and what the Central Division teams did today during the NHL trade deadline. Sort of a quiet day coming out of the Central Division. The biggest splash of them all was made last Friday when the St. Louis Blues acquired Ryan Miller and Steve Ott, of course, from the Buffalo Sabres. We went through that trade. They made another minor trade, acquiring Eric Selick in exchange for Mark Mancari. I would analyze that trade, but I haven't heard of either of those guys, so admittedly, we'll skip over that one. Chicago Blackhawks, Richard. Coming into today, we thought that their need would be a second-line center. They had Michael Hanzus in that spot currently. They decided they didn't need to upgrade that spot. And what they did is they acquired two defensemen from the Phoenix Coyotes, that being David Rundblad and Matthew Brisebois. They did that yesterday in exchange for a 2014 second-round pick. Also yesterday, they made a trade with the Florida Panthers, getting a 2014 third-round pick and a 2016 fifth-round pick in exchange for Brandon Peary. So sort of minor moves, although I do like the Rundblad move to just increase their defensive depth there.
Yeah, it's the Rundblad was interesting, and that kind of tourist move looking a lot better for Ottawa now than some people thought that it looked after. There's a lot of people who kind of ripped Ryan Murray for that trade, so... I think they're hiding out right now. But you know what? You look at Rundblad, he's a puck mover.
Yeah.
And he's not the best defensively and all that stuff. But the point is that based on their defensive depth, you just rely on that guy if you need to, and you can maybe bring him in the fold later on. What do you want to do with Letty or some other guys money-wise? But Rambut, if he does play, that system works great for him because they're always on the offense, and they like to blow the zone early and create space, and Rambut can make the pass, and you know, he can move the puck. So I don't mind that. Second round pick, he'll be 60th basically overall.
Yeah.
Not a huge deal there. But, you know, they didn't have a second-line center, and let's be honest, I mean, they really have had that hole for a long time, and they don't seem to need it. I mean, they always needed a center, second-line center, but needed is relevant to the fact that they always win. Sure. I think they're the best team in the league.
They'll be without Marian Hossa for the next couple weeks.
Doesn't matter. He's back for the playoffs, I assume. I don't think really what they did and do or is an issue. Do they need to match St. Louis? I think they're still better than St. Louis, personally.
Right, and David Rundblad is a guy, as you mentioned, was traded as part of the Kyle Turris trade, and he's a guy that really has a lot of upside. He's young, but he might not even get into the lineup. The Chicago Blackhawks are so stacked on defense. Mm-hmm. Really, what they're doing is they're just increasing their depth. So that was kind of a trade that flew under the radar, which was a really good move for them. When you see that what the Flyers gave up for Andrew McDonald, different situation, but a team like the Flyers could have possibly used Rundblad. But yeah, the Hawks were using Brandon Peary, Andrew Shaw. You mentioned Michael Hanzus. Michael Hanzus, ideally, you don't want to put in that situation because he's more of a checking center, Drew. But really, they're so stacked on forward, and they're still stacked without Marian Hossa. And sure, Marian Hossa is obviously going to make your team better, but this Chicago Blackhawks team, they don't lose a lot of games. Right. We know that. It took them 50 games last year, it seemed like, to lose. I'm joking, of course, but I think it was 25 games.
Yeah.
But didn't expect a lot to happen out of Chicago. People were talking about backup goaltender. Antti Ranta's fine. They're so good, and not much has changed from last year. Sure, you know, you could say that they go out and acquire a second-line center, but as we talked about, when it relates to the Winnipeg Jets, aside from David Legwand, there aren't a lot of veteran NHL-ready defensemen that you can acquire on the trade market without giving up a player on your roster. Just, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So the Chicago Blackhawks improve significantly without really doing much. Improve a little bit and didn't do much.
Yeah. The Colorado Avalanche made one small deal. They acquired Rito Berra from the Calgary Flames in exchange for a 2014 second-round pick. Seems like a pretty decent price to pay, but I guess it's giving them some insurance because Jean-Sébastien Giguère is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year.
So, yeah, they paid a high price there, I thought.
Yeah.
Rito Berra's done well in Calgary, but Giguère is solidified in that backup position behind Varlamov, who now, after putting all that trouble behind him, he's been really good, and obviously had that bad game for Russia in the Olympics. But yeah, a little bit surprised about that, but they're obviously thinking maybe with Giguère possibly in his final year, they could possibly sign this guy going forward. I mean, he's done a really good job for Calgary. I mean, the guy has had a pretty bad team in front of him for most of the year, and he's been pretty good.
They gave us $6 million contract to Varlamov. It's odd that they give a second-round pick for his backup. That's weird. Yeah, that was a weird move. Nice work by Brian Burke's GM, who I think is Brian Burke, actually.
It is, even though he claims it's not going to be. It's going to be like the Leafs. Remember when the Leafs were, you know, Ken Dryden was going to hire a GM, and it took him about a year and a half in the Leafs to actually hire one, and then he ended up with John Ferguson Jr.? Well,
yeah. But the thing is about Burke, jokes aside, is I thought he did okay today.
Yeah, he did okay.
He didn't trade Camilleri, which I disagreed with, although you listened to his comments, it appears he didn't have much. There wasn't really much there to receive. You want to have a clip there, Rim?
Oh, you want to play it now? We can play it later.
Let's play it later when we get to the Calgary.
Okay. But
We'll get it when we get to Calgary. Minnesota Wild, they were active. They acquired one of the prime goal scorers on the market. Matt Molson and Cody McCormick go to Minnesota in exchange for Torrey Mitchell, a 2014 second-round pick, and a 2016 second-round pick. In addition, they acquire Ilya Brizgalov from the Edmonton Oilers in exchange for a 2014 fourth-round pick. You know, like what the Wild did here. Nothing wrong with, you know, you're giving up, you know, Torrey Mitchell's, you know, more or less just a guy on that team, and you give up a couple second-round picks. I know Matt Molson's a rental, but if you can sign him, it looks good.
That's the key. You just nailed it, Drew, and I know Richie will have something to say about this as well. I think that, really, again, for the second year in a row, the Minnesota Wild have made a splash. This is already a team with a lot of depth, and we talked about this on Saturday when we were previewing the trade deadline coming up. Danny Heatley's starting to score. Nino Niederreiter has been great after coming over from the Islanders for Cal Clutterbuck. They've got a lot of talent. Mikko Koivu's injured. And that's the key, really, to if they go anywhere, Richie, in the first round, and if you match up against, most likely it'll be St. Louis, maybe Anaheim. I guess it can't be St. Louis, right? It'd have to be Anaheim. Could be St. Louis?
Yeah, it could be St.
Louis. Yeah, it could be St. Louis. I don't know how...
Right now, it's people have, we were talking about it earlier as, by the way, Colorado's a few points back of taking the division lead.
Yeah.
It's possible Chicago and St. Louis play in the first round right now.
Unbelievable. And would that be a good series or what? You go out and acquire Matt Molson, and it has the potential of being a rental. But you'd have to think that it would be in their best interest to sign him. And that's kind of the wild card to that trade. If they give up those picks, and I know one of them is... One or two of them are conditional, I believe.
No, I don't believe so.
No, they're not conditional. So, I mean, if they gave up... Torrey Mitchell's not a guy that plays a lot in the NHL anymore. He hasn't been that relevant, really, in the NHL. And you're getting a guy who's just going to make you even better.
Yeah.
But the key to me for them to make any noise in the first round, Mikko Koivu's got to be healthy, Richard.
Well, I mean, yeah, and he's going to be coming back. And he's coming back to his return, obviously... helps immensely. But we addressed their needs on the Saturday preview show. And what do we say their needs were? Size up front. So McCormick's a tough guy.
Yeah.
Molson's tough on the puck. He's not a small guy, over 200 pounds. And top 4D or any D. So I think they've addressed, if you look at their lines, Koivu comes back, Koivu, Parise, Palmaville, you say that's their top one. And then you look at Molson maybe sliding beside Coyle or beside Granlund, however they want to do that. And then who do they play on the right side of them? There's a lot of guys here, Brodziak, Cook. They have a lot of pieces that I think are good pieces. I just wonder, the questions I have are this. And you had Brizgalov, sure, so possibly goalie, we said, is also a need. So they've addressed two of the needs. The problem I have is, as he mentions, competition. Colorado, St. Louis, although St. Louis to a lesser extent, we'll talk about them, and Chicago can all score. Especially Chicago and Colorado in terms of top-end offensive talent.
And Richie, Minnesota's not the type of team that plays run and gun. As we've seen in Winnipeg, this is a team that plays very patiently,
but
very
can they defend?
Style.
Can they defend? I mean, can they defend one-on-one? Can the Wild defense compete with those forwards, simply?
After Ryan Suter.
Yes, and Brodin.
Yeah, and that's the question. We'll find out.
And I just think that they, to address the Molson, and Molson, I think, helps. And I think, as he mentioned, style of play, I think that contributes to lack of scoring at times when you're cutting down, you know, when you're playing a certain style, it contributes to your inability to score goals at times. I mean, if you look at the Minnesota Wild in terms of their goal output, 153 goals this year is very poor.
I think the Minnesota Wild, Richie, and again, I think that they don't win in the first round, especially if they play St. Louis or Chicago, but they're also a wild card team, not literally, because obviously they are in the wild card spot, but what I mean is, you look at that lineup. And Darcy Kemper right now, this guy should be getting more press because of the way the guy's played since Josh Harding went down. We know that Josh Harding's had those injury problems, and they went out and they acquired Brizgalov as insurance. But Darcy Kemper's been unbelievable, but he's still a rookie. And we know Ryan Suter's a top defenseman. He'll probably be a Norris candidate this year. We know they've got some good players there. We talked about all of the good players that they have up front. But that team, to me, it would scare me a little bit to play them, especially now that they've added Molson.
We'll get back to the other teams in the Central Division a little bit later in the show. For now, let's go to break, and when we come back, Jim Jamieson of the Vancouver Province will join us to talk about the disaster in Vancouver. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Vancouver Province, Jim Jamieson. Jim, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good evening to you guys. How are you doing?
We're doing very well, Jim. You know, obviously, there's been a lot of news coming out of Vancouver over the past few days. Started with Ryan Kesler about a week ago, give or take. Ended up with Roberto Luongo becoming a member of the Florida Panthers yesterday. How surprised were you when you got word that Luongo was on his way to Florida after so many months and almost years now of discussing his status with the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, I was very surprised, shocked, I guess. Obviously, his desire to be out of here has been around for a couple of years, but the conventional thinking was that his contract was just too difficult to move. And the GM had tried it a couple summers for a couple summers consecutively without having any success. And of course, the new CBA makes it even more punitive to have a guy like that on your roster. But the thing is that I think what happened was they managed to get a deal done with Florida because Florida has new owners and they have deeper pockets and they're willing to do that kind of a deal. The Canucks, of course, are keeping about 15% of that deal, paying for it, about $800,000 per season. They'll pay and accept on their cap. But yeah, it was really surprising, and you get all kinds of conflicting reports about what kind of triggered it. But one of those things that nobody saw coming. And, it has so many different angles you could explore. But anyway, that's what I'll say initially about that.
Well, Jim, just as a follow-up question to that, Luongo doesn't start in the Heritage Classic. Everyone expects Luongo to start. Eddie Lack started the previous game. Luongo mentioned that he wanted to start that game, and he was fine with not starting the previous game. You mentioned some of the triggers that could have possibly precipitated this. Why was the decision ultimately made not to start him in that game, and how much do you believe that played into moving Luongo out of Vancouver?
Well, I think it did play into it. I think that I understand his agent has said today that was a factor in it, and there's so many stories out there, versions of stories that don't jive. I mean, one of the things John Tortorella has said after the game on Sunday, the Heritage Classic, that he had started Luongo. It was his decision. It was based on a hockey decision. Now, many of us in the media here in Vancouver were in vehement disagreement with that decision for all kinds of reasons, optics and just hockey. I mean, John felt that that Lack was playing better than better chance to win. I would say that's dubious. There was some thought that perhaps he'd been held out because they didn't want, they had some kind of a deal in the works, and they didn't want to take a chance on him getting injured in that game, so that the deal would be canceled off. But which is something Mike Gillis alluded to following the trade. However, John Tortorella reiterated that it was a hockey decision. There was no reason to do that. And Dale Tallon said in his conference call after the trade that the deal really didn't start getting talked about because they had talked about this kind of a deal, last year. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was new ground, but it didn't really get resumed until Monday afternoon. So, you can throw out all your X-Files questions you want, but I mean the two positions are mutually exclusive. I mean, they don't jibe. My question is, I agree with you that there's all kinds of questions here about what the timeline was and what actually triggered this, but there's certainly a lot of potential things out there.
Jim, I mean, this is for lack of better words, it's a complete gong show. I mean, as you know, I mean, Gillis signs him to this deal, and then the relationship deteriorates to the point where he needs to be traded. If the word around the NHL is the asking price to Toronto and Florida the last time around was far higher than obviously it was this time, with Gillis, I guess, conceding that he was asking for far too much years down the road, which would have done far less damage, I think, over the past year or so. At what point does he have to admit that this has been a giant misplay with both of the goaltenders? And then, I guess, on second part of that question is, how do you trust him to not do that again with Kessler?
Well, exactly. And, I would agree with that. I mean, if you look at, if he'd got the deal done last summer, then he would have had, he would have been able to have, assuming, and this is all nebulous because you don't know that the same players would be in play a year ago, but if he got the deal done last June, then what you would have had is you would have had your two goalies would be Corey Schneider and Jacob Markstrom. So that's a pretty nice, as opposed to Eddie Lack and Jacob Markstrom. So you wouldn't have Bo Horvat, but I mean, who knows how good Bo Horvat's going to be? He's certainly a very bright prospect. But yeah, I mean, if you look at it that way, it's one of those things where going forward, there has been some reports today, vehemently denied by the Canucks, that ownership kind of nixed this deal that they want for Kessler, and certainly that's coming out of Pittsburgh. that the Penguins felt they had a deal, but the ownership just was just backed off on it. Gillis didn't actually deny it. He sort of said that, you know, ownership's always very involved and has been over time. So, you know, there's just so much going on here. I mean, you use the word gong show. Yeah, I think that's pretty appropriate.
And, Jim, you talk about ownership of Francisco Aquilini and Mike Gillis. I thought, I mean, you would know far better than we would. Their relationship was supposed to be ironclad at some point. Is it not that same way anymore?
Well, I mean, again, it's hard to know these things. I mean, these you're talking about very high echelon relationships. I would think that the owner is very loyal to Mike Gillis in the sense that, you know, Gillis is his guy. I mean, he's the one he hired to run this team in 2008 when they decided to move, you know, to move on from Dave Nonis, and so there's obviously a lot invested in that. And but on the other hand, you know, owners are in business to make money. You know, the owner's a passionate hockey fan, as many, you know, sports owners are. But I mean, I think first and foremost, he's a businessman and he needs to make money. And the way this franchise has crumbled over this past season is remarkable. It's really scary. And yeah, I would think that the damage to the brand and the devaluation that you've seen in this team has to be very concerning for him. And I don't think Mike Gillis has a lot of mulligans left, if you want to put it that way. I think he's got to deliver, and you wonder whether the owner just is losing a bit of confidence in him to be able to deliver this trade.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Jim Jamieson from the Vancouver province discussing the Vancouver Canucks and, as we just described it, the gong show situation in British Columbia. Jim, you know, sort of a two-part question. Are you surprised that Ryan Kesler is still a Vancouver Canuck, you know, today, right after the trade deadline? And secondly, do you think that the Canucks got close at all to dealing him in the last week or 10 days when the rumors began to leak out that he might want out of Vancouver?
Well, I am surprised he didn't move. I think there was huge pressure to move him, and I am one of those. I mean, it's a highly debated topic today, of course, in Vancouver. Just whether it's, you know, do you get a better return on Kesler if you trade him now, or you get a better return? I know there's one school of thought that believes that if you wait until the end of the season and you make him available at the draft in June, that there's going to be more suitors and that sort of thing. Therefore, you might. But my opinion is that you get a better deal for him now because there's more urgency. The thing is, Kesler has 2 years left on a very affordable $5 million per season, which is a very good deal for him. And so that if you got him right now, that gives you three playoff runs with him. And let's face it, you're getting Kesler as a piece that's going to put you over the top in a playoff run because he's shown he's a great playoff player. And he's very good defensively. He's a great shutdown center, all that stuff. The kind of player you want on your team in a very tough, you know, gritty, hard-hitting playoff series. So now you've taken that off the table, that one, you know, you've gone now from three playoffs to two. He's a little bit older. You take a chance on him getting injured in the last 18 games here. I mean, I think there's a lot of negatives to waiting until June. And I was surprised he didn't move. And I just think that, it, you know, who knows whether this is going to turn into another Roberto Luongo situation where they couldn't move him for 2 years. I think what they wanted was they had this idea that they wanted a certain amount. They wanted a top six center. They wanted a first round pick. They wanted a bright draft pick, you know, a prospect. I just don't think that they were quite there. And I think that's why they didn't move him.
Jim, we heard reports out of Vancouver that Alex Edler was possibly moving out of Vancouver. How close was Edler to being traded?
I don't think Edler was very close at all. I don't. My understanding is that Edler is, and this is not something that's he said publicly, but my understanding is that he's not particularly interested in waiving his no trade clause. And so I don't think there was, from what I understand, there was nothing ever close on him because it was a non-starter right from the beginning. You know, he signed a 6-year deal, and I think he likes Vancouver, and I don't think he really wants to move on at this point. So I don't think there was anything ever close on Edler.
Is there any update, Jim, on Daniel Sedin? I know he's been put on IR, but do we know if that's going to be a long-term thing?
Well, I mean, there was one report that it was going to be a minimum of 3 weeks. Tortorella said, I believe yesterday, that he thought he would be quote-unquote out for a while. And so I think that's where that sits. But, you know, I mean, you know, you're probably familiar with Daniel Sedin's struggles. I mean, it has just been absolutely astonishing how his production has fallen off. He was, when he was injured, he had not scored in 22 consecutive games, which really goes back to his second season as a Canuck, which was, he had a good first season as a 19-year-old rookie. You know, I think he had 20 goals that year, and then had a real tough second year. And I think he went 24, 25 games that year without scoring outside one point. And he's now 22 without a goal, and just an absolute shadow of himself. I don't know what's, you know, it's so mystifying. I mean, you know, possibly it could be the extra ice time that he's getting with Tortorella. He just can't handle it. Maybe it's Tortorella's defensive system. It just doesn't play to his strengths. I don't know what it is, but and the scary part is that they just, both brothers have just been signed to a new deal. It begins next year. 4 years at $7 million.
The plan is just all over the place, it seems like.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
Jim, I look at the roster, and one thing that stands out, and we were talking earlier on in the day with Rick Ralph, you mentioned Alex Edler and his, you know, not maybe wanting to waive his no-trade clause. Then we have Roberto Luongo demanding a trade, but only to certain teams, and Ryan Kesler doing the same thing. You look at their roster right now, Hamhuis, Garrison, Bieksa, Edler, Higgins, Burrows, Kessler, both Sedins, and we mentioned Kessler earlier. All of these guys have some form of no-trade clauses. Was that something that there was not enough foresight there when building this roster and then the lack of control that you'd have later on to try and make the moves you want to make?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make that criticism. I think the rationale at the time was that the feeling of management was that they had a really good, solid core of a roster, and a roster that was built to, you know, contend for multiple years. And they just wanted to lock it up under what they felt, you know, and they offered these no trades in exchange for, you know, term and, you know, annual cap hit,
right,
and salary that would be a bit more friendly. So they got a lot of these guys to take, you know, what you might want to call hometown discounts in some regards to get these deals done, but feeling that these would be good investments long term because, you know, they'd be contending for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. But you know, when that doesn't happen, then these things really come back to bite you like they are now.
Jim, Ryan Kesler obviously doesn't move today. Is it possible this is a blessing in disguise? With the salary cap going up, the Canucks possibly get more for Ryan Kesler?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. As I said earlier, there's two schools of thought about that. I'm of the school of thought that you were going to get your best return today. But, you know, I could be wrong, but I just think that, as I say, you know, Ryan Kesler's a guy, and I can understand why. I mean, I don't pretend to know all the inside reasons why he's asked for a trade, but I can see strictly from a pragmatic point of view. You know, he's 29. He's had two hip labrum surgeries. He's had a shoulder labrum surgery. You know, he's a guy who plays a very hard game. He's got a lot of miles as a result on his body. And I'm sure he knows that he's maybe only got, you know, 4 or 5 years, really productive years left in his career. And so he doesn't want to spend those years on a rebuilding team. He can see what's going on here. So I'm sure he wants to move. And, you know, I can understand for that reason why he'd want to move on. But I think that in this scenario that the Canucks, you know, a team wanting him can see that they're going to get 3 playoff runs out of the 2 years remaining on his contract. And now if they move him in June, that's down to 2 playoff runs. So I think that sort of detracts a little bit from the asset.
Jim, we'll let you go on this last question. We mentioned that you mentioned that, you know, the writing's on the wall when it comes to a rebuild. It seems pretty apparent it's going to happen in Vancouver. Their head coach is going to have 3 years left on his contract after this season.
4 years, I believe.
They signed him to a 4-year deal, I thought.
5-year deal, I thought it was.
Whatever it was. He's got 3 or 4 years left on his contract. Is he the right coach to see this team through a rebuild?
That's a really good question, and I think it's one that management and ownership are going to have to really look at the end of the season when they look at this and see what happened. And because I'll tell you something, when they announced they were hiring Tortorella last summer, I had some reservations because of his track record in New York. And however,
you know, I was gave him, you know, he had an open book, and I just came in. I thought that the first through training camp and the first, you know, right up through December when they had a great month, I think they were 10-1-1 in December. You know, it all seemed to be working for him. I mean, a lot of stuff he was doing was counterintuitive. You know, playing guys more, playing the Twins a lot more. Mm-hmm. Kepler had the most average ice time of any forward in the league. This kind of thing. It just seemed counterintuitive. You know, you just think when a team that travels like Vancouver, is this going to work with all that? Is fatigue not going to be a factor? But anyway, I would say that after he went down the hallway, in January and, you know, to the Flames hallway at Rogers Arena, and then got suspended. I mean, it's been the goofiest 7 weeks I've seen. It's right up there with 1997 with Mike Keenan. I'm not comparing him to Mike Keenan. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, there's some similarities.
Yeah. Well, I know, but I mean, I've worked with them both, and I think there are quite distinct differences. But I'm just saying that the kind of goofy things that went on there, it reminds me of those bad old days in 1997, 1998 for this franchise. And, you know, I just hope it doesn't go down that direction.
You know, I want to just keep going on this for a second, Jim. Sorry, we're up against it. But sure. On that point about Tortorella, how much of it is him trying to hold back who he really is? And is that affecting the way he coaches? Because sometimes, you know, you can't change who you are.
Yeah, you know, I think he doesn't want to have a legacy of being a guy who's a punchline, and I understand that, and I appreciate that, and I think he's, for the most part, done a great job of it, but there are times when he just can't help himself and makes comments about players in press conferences that I think probably he regrets later, that sort of thing, and that's come out this year. I mean, it's great for us because it makes good copy, but I mean, it probably doesn't help the room much. When players, you know, of course, it all gets back to the players, and but I just wonder, you know, if his systems and you know, the way the team is playing right now, they just seem dead in the water, and I just wonder whether some of the players are starting to tune them out already. I mean, I don't know that, but I mean, what other explanation can there be for some of the lack of performance of some of these guys? So. It's just been a shocking downturn in terms of team performance.
It's amazing.
It's been quite a spectacle.
Jim Jamieson covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver Province. The Canucks will be in town a week from tonight, next Wednesday, against the Winnipeg Jets. Jim, hope to see you there. Thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Jim.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette on the Montreal Canadiens is going to join us.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Couple minutes past 7 o'clock. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Transferring a call.
Pleased to welcome back to NHL Midweek from the Montreal Gazette, our good friend Pat Hickey. Pat, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, always a pleasure, guys.
Pat, Montreal Canadiens, one of the busier teams today at the end of the NHL trade deadline. The big acquisition, of course, getting Thomas Vanek from the New York Islanders. You know, how surprised are you that Thomas Vanek ends up on the Montreal Canadiens roster after all is said and done?
I'm a little surprised. You know, I didn't know whether they would have the resources to get him. As it turns out, it wasn't a very high price that they paid. Draft pick, a prospect who hasn't really been panning out in Sweden. You know, I think this is a real steal. You know, of course, there was Mark Bergevin pitted against Garth Snow. I think Bergevin has the it doesn't have the experience that Garth Snow has, but he's certainly a brighter general manager. Yeah. And I think he got the best of that deal.
Pat, is this a pure rental? The big question, obviously, is are the Habs going to be able to re-sign Thomas Vanek? Have you been able to uncover any of that in the short time since Vanek was traded to Montreal?
Well, I believe it's a pure rental. We asked Vanek about it earlier today, and he skated around the question, but... you know, here's the deal. He's got three young kids. His wife's in America. His wife's in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. He has a home in Minnesota. I think that's where he's going to end up. I'm a little surprised that Matt Molson went to Minnesota and then Vanek went to Montreal. But, you know, I think that it's, you know, it's one of those deals that, you know, I mean, he'll certainly help them in the playoff run, but I don't expect that they'll be able to sign him going forward.
Pat, who do you think he lines up beside?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, I think that he can probably, he might take, you know, Brendan Gallagher's spot on that line with Pacioretty and Dehane. I think that would be a pretty interesting line. Very similar to when they had Derek Cole with Pacioretty and Dehane a couple of years ago. There's also a possibility. I mean, he's good friends with Brian Gionta, and of course, he's played with Daniel Briere in the past, so there's a possibility, you know, there, except that, you know, you'd have to figure out, you know, playing with one of those guys and Thomas Plekanec in the center. It would certainly be good for Plekanec because it would be the best line mates he's had in, since Alex Kovalev was around.
And, you know, they want to get bigger up front, Pat. Obviously, Vanek isn't the most physical big guy, but it's just a matter of having a bigger player up front, one of the, obviously he can score too, but a significant piece in terms of this team competing with Boston's and teams like that in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think anytime, you know, he's a 6'2", and, yeah, you know, anytime he can throw him in there on a team that's filled with guys 5'10 or less, you know, that certainly has to be a bit of an upgrade. I mean, the other move they made yesterday was one of those ones that confound you a little bit. They've got lots of defensemen, but they picked up Mike Weaver, very dependable player, except he's 5'10 or 5'9". And, you know, he's one of these guys who plays bigger than he is, but you would think that, you know, if they were going to try to find a defenseman, they'd get somebody in there with a little more size. I mean, certainly he does play a physical game, but he's just not that big.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette talking about the moves the Montreal Canadiens made at the trade deadline. Pat, we obviously talked about the Vanek deal. You mentioned Mike Weaver. They got Devan Dubnyk for depth, really, in Hamilton more than anything. You know, does this, do the moves the Canadiens made at the trade deadline, do they change the ceiling for this team entering the playoffs? Do they become, you know, do they go around deeper into the playoffs as a result of these moves, or are they still sort of, you know, probably battling with to be in the same spot?
Well, I think that this is a team, you know, that's a couple of years away from the vision that Marc Bergevin and Michel Therrien have for it. But certainly this, the chances of getting past the first round are certainly better than they were a day ago. I mean, but you look at this team right now, I mean, they're in second place in the Atlantic Division. You know, so that it's not like this is a, you know, a team that's struggling to make the playoffs. I think unless they really have a terrible West Coast trip, which is always possible, because they're playing you know, four strong teams, lost to Los Angeles last night, and I don't think they, I don't want to say they're throwing in the towel tonight, but they're starting Dustin Tokarski in goal, which means that, you know, they're hoping to steal a point or two tonight and putting all their efforts into winning the game tomorrow night in Phoenix.
Pat, I want to go back to Devan Dubnyk for a second, because he was traded from Edmonton to Nashville, but as we know, Carey Price has been injured. How much of this is insurance for Carey Price, and what's, I guess, the latest injury update on Carey Price?
If you believe the Canadiens, it has no bearing at all on it, but I think this might be in the back of their minds. Carey Price was back on the ice this morning for the morning skate. He joined them late in the skate. He didn't take the whole morning skate in. He's slowly getting back, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's ready to play probably next Wednesday when they return home to play against Boston.
Pat, was the team shopping Lars Eller, as some reported?
Well, you know, they're not happy with Lars Eller. I mean, he's a healthy scratch tonight. You know, I think that they might have tried to shop him around, you know, obviously there were no takers. Lars is one of those guys, they can't really figure out where he fits in. I mean, he's played center, he's played on the wing. The feeling is that, you know, in the long run, he's a top six center, but right now, you know, he hasn't been proving. He's had some good line mates, And he just hasn't proved that he can take that next step.
You know, you talk about the Mike Weaver addition, you know, going to help on the penalty kill, and then you mentioned, you know, the size, the lack of size there. Were you surprised at all that, I mean, you look at Markov and Subban, obviously, Pat, they can move the puck real well, although Markov doesn't skate really as well as he used to. Were you surprised they didn't add maybe a defenseman who can move the puck, or is that something that they didn't necessarily need?
Well, I'm surprised they added a defenseman at all. You know, one of the things is that they have some depth on there. Now, there's some question they have to sign Markov. He's an unrestricted free agent. Mm-hmm. And right now, I think they're set on money. They're just haggling over the term of the contract. But if you look going forward, they've got Subban, Markov, Yemelin, and Josh George is your top four. You've got Beaulieu and Tenorti, who have both come up and played well when they've come up in the minors. They got Greg Pattern, who's still down in Hamilton. So, you know, they've got lots of guys at that position. And as I said, I was a little surprised when they added, you know, they added yet another guy. You know, although I think, you know, Weaver, again, is just strictly a rental, you know, to help them out, give them a little bit of depth in case something happens.
You mentioned Andrei Markov there, Pat. What's the latest on his contract situation? There's talk that, is it just a matter of, you know, the Habs only want 1 year and Markov's looking for a second year?
Yeah, I think Markov originally was looking for 5 years, and you know, at 35 or 36, he's just not going to get that, particularly with the history of the injuries that he has. You know, I think that he has since softened his stance. He was negotiating his own contract for a while. Now he's got an agent. He's got Sergei Berezin, former NHL player, handling his case for him. But I think the latest request or demand was 3 years. The Canadians have offered one. I think they'll saw off at two, and Markov will stay. Markov in the past has taken a couple of hometown discounts. He really enjoys playing in Montreal. And, you know, I think that unless he thinks that he can get an offer somewhere else that really wows him 4 or 5 years, but I just don't see anybody doing that.
Pat, I hope Sergei Berezin negotiates better than he used to pass.
You know, Pat, we talked about Andrei Markov. Do you have any update on P.K. Subban, or are we way too early to be talking about P.K. Subban and his contract?
Well, I think I don't know, but way too early. But, you know, the contract talks are ongoing. You know, I don't think there's any doubt that you know, PK is going to get the max as far as the term. They might quibble a little bit over the money. You know, I think everybody knows he's going to get somewhere in the between $7.5 and $9 million a season. Mm-hmm. And it's just a question of how much. I think sometimes the Canadians, Michel Therrien slaps them down a little bit, and I don't know whether that's part of the negotiations, but, you know, it's one of those things. He will get paid, and he will get, you know, what he deserves.
Pat Hickey covers the Montreal Canadiens for the Montreal Gazette. Pat, thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy the game in Anaheim tonight.
Anytime, guys.
Take care, Pat. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Pat.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We listen to proposals beforehand, and I'm not going into specifics about any specific player, so you can do what you want with that, but... none of them were adequate enough for any player that we had that we thought would move us ahead and put us in a position where we can start to look at long-term goals.
Vancouver Canucks general manager Mike Gillis addressing the media following today's NHL trade deadline as the Canucks do not end up pulling the trigger on a trade for Ryan Kesler. They do make a minor deal today, and by today I mean in this 24-hour period, shipping out Rafael Diaz, who they had just acquired from the Montreal Canadiens. In exchange, they get a fifth-round pick for him. I believe they shipped him to the Rangers, I'm not mistaken.
The Rangers, yes.
And then, of course, yesterday, trading Roberto Luongo and Stephen Anthony to the Florida Panthers for Jakob Markstrom and Sean Matthias, a deal that... gong show, like we just spoke about with Jim Jameson a couple segments ago. An absolute gong show in
Vancouver.
Well,
I mean, if you look at the deal, just straight at the deal in a vacuum, and getting Markstrom, who has had struggled in the NHL, although had some success both in the past and recently in the AHL, and then getting Sean Mathias, who's a pending UFA. Sorry, not pending UFA. One more year, 1.75. If you look at it in a vacuum, the return for Luongo, not bad. Based on them taking your, you're taking 15% of the contract. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that you don't love, but the point is this: if they had done this when they should have, when they ought to have, a while back,
yeah,
right,
they could have avoided all this. They could have still had Schneider, unless there's some other stuff in the dressing room that we don't know about, which there are rumblings of. They could have avoided most of it, if not all of it, and moved on.
It's a self-inflicted wound.
That's exactly right. And then you look at it, and you look at it in the big picture, as we mentioned earlier, Schneider, Luongo,
yeah,
for Mathias.
Markstrom.
For Markstrom.
And Bo Horvat. Yeah.
And it's unbelievable the way it was handled. And the distractions that existed throughout... You mentioned self-inflicted. Ezzy talks about the Stadium Series and the Heritage Classic. That is a self-inflicted wound.
Even if you think that Eddie Lack's going to give you the better chance to win, which I don't believe that to be the case, you give Luongo the start based on loyalty and based on the fact that he's done so much and he's been so good for your team over the years, and he is not... I mean, Lack or Luongo,
Did you see Don Cherry during that game?
Yeah.
He said, nobody gets treated this poorly. It's unbelievable. Again and again.
Yeah.
And finally, it finally broke the camel's back.
And then Pat Brisson goes on the radio today, I believe, a TSN affiliate.
Who Luongo had to switch agents because he thought before, Joe Zupian, I believe, was his agent before.
Sure.
Couldn't get him out.
Right.
Because he just said, I need to change something. So now Brisson finally was able to, I don't know if he's a catalyst here, but.
Well, and Brisson said, if Luongo starts the Heritage Classic, he's still a member of the Canucks today.
Of course he is. And the way things, it's not, Richie mentioned, what they got for, I like Sean Mathias, and he's had varying degrees of success. He's been streaky, but he's still young. And,
bottom six guy.
And they got Jacob Markstrom, who is still young enough, and he's been, again, he's been hot and cold in the NHL, but he hasn't been on a very good team, let's be honest. But he's a decent goalie. He's an NHL goalie, but it's the way it's gone down.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way everything's happened. We talked about this a week ago when it started to come out that Ryan Kessler wanted out of Vancouver. It's the way he wants out of Vancouver. The ship is sinking, and it's about where are they going now? Jim Jameson, who we had on last hour, talked about it. This is a team that's going to have to admit they're rebuilding, because this team is not only in trouble now, Drew, they're in danger of missing the playoffs this year. Yeah. It's a team...
It's not a playoff team.
But they're not even talking about the playoffs. It's as if the playoffs don't exist. They're right near the Jets.
Well, it's not like they're not even close to mathematically out of it.
I know.
I mean, the way they've been playing, obviously, they're trending down.
Yeah.
But it's next year and the year after, because now... You have to replace Kessler. You have to trade Kessler, but obviously replace him. It's where do you go now? Because in my mind, they're rebuilding now.
It's just an absolute gong show. Here's audio of Pat Brisson talking about Roberto Luongo.
Mike and I didn't really speak much about the future at that point. But then when this happened on Saturday, I mean, it was an opportunity to revisit and express how we felt in a sense. But I didn't think... At that point, I didn't think, it's a complicated contract to move. I didn't think that it was going to happen that quick. And if not, I was going to probably revisit at the end of the season prior to the draft. But it all happened fairly quickly.
You think if Roberto had played on Sunday, he would still be a Vancouver Canuck?
Possibly, yes, I would say so. If he played, I could say that if he had played, then maybe the call wouldn't have happened. Right. Will he be at that point if he had been a Canucks coming this summer? Who knows?
Courtesy of our affiliate station in Toronto, TSN 1050, Dave Naylor and Dave Hodge interviewing Roberto Luongo's agent earlier today. One last point on that deal before we move on to some of the other trades, and we can revisit it on Saturday. If Roberto Luongo retires in 2021, it costs the Vancouver Canucks $8 million on their salary cap because of the cap recapture formula.
Right, and it changes based on the year they retires. But can we quickly go from Florida's perspective? Because we haven't addressed that at all.
Sure, go ahead.
Because we're going to be up against, so we're going to have to go trade by trade and not division by division here.
Yeah.
Luongo, they're eating 15% of his contract, Ezzy. They've traded Markstrom, who they didn't love. Mathias, who, I mean, is expendable, bottom six guy who can play in the NHL. Just, not going to be that much of a, not the most effective player. They get Luongo, who is 34 years old, right? Turning 35 in April here. But they're paying him 4.5. Now, they have to deal with some of the recapture as well later on if that does happen. But they're paying Luongo.
Their salary cap recapture is minimal all the way through.
Right. It's not, but they have to deal with it, but not to much of an extent.
$1 million max.
Right. So the point is $4.5 million for a pretty darn good goalie and locked up. And you mentioned the other factors, cap is going up and those things, sure, for everybody. But $4.5 million for Luongo, hey, that's not a bad deal. And people are saying, oh, you know, tell he's 43. Hey, look at some of these goalies right now. Look at Brodeur playing until he's 40, 41. Not as effective as he was before, but $4.5 million, the money you save on the front end, you know, affords you some flexibility in the back end.
And even if he retires early, it's not that big. It's more of an albatross on the Canucks salary cap, as it has to do with the cap recapture formula, than it is on the Panthers.
Right.
And for $4.5 million, not only do they get a pretty good goaltender, they get a face of the franchise. And who's the face of the Florida Panthers franchise? Oh, see, in their entire history, who's their face?
And you tie your past.
Scott
your,
Mellenby, maybe?
You tie your past. Well, it depends. I mean, do you want to get into the Ray Shepard, Dave Lowry talk here? You tie your past to your future. And I like that. And again, the $4.5 million, they're not going to spend a lot of money on goalies now. But later on, when they're eating some of his money, so be it. They'll be able to deal with it.
I hope they're literally not eating his money, but I think I understand what you're saying, Richie. But no, and it's a team that's on the up and up. And we've like Nick Bjugstad and Alexander Barkov, and that's the faces of the future for this team. And then Eric Gudbranson and on and on and on. They've really stockpiled their cupboards with draft picks because they've had they haven't had, I should say, a lot of playoff success, the one playoff round in the last 10 years, right? So yeah, and most importantly, Roberto Luongo is going back to the franchise where it all started.
Mm-hmm.
Islanders don't count, but the Florida Panthers, that's where he has a home. That's where he had his best years statistically, not playoff wise, but and he gets a fresh start. This is a fresh start for Luongo, and of course it benefits the Florida Panthers. A couple years ago, they were rumored to be in on Roberto Luongo, and now they get him. And they, as you mentioned before, Drew, they didn't give up as much to get him.
Well, I'm sure Vancouver's asking price went down from a lot, unnecessarily asking for too much, to a more reasonable level.
A more reasonable level, and we have to eat some of the, and they have to eat some of the money.
That's a more reasonable level.
I know. Just an absolute disaster in Vancouver. Moving to Nashville quickly, they made really two moves. The big one was trading away their first ever draft pick, that being David Legwand. He had been a lifetime Nashville Predator up to this point. He goes to Detroit in exchange for Patrick Eves, prospect Callie Yarncroc, a third round pick that becomes a second round pick if Detroit ends up making the playoffs this year. From Nashville's perspective?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know a lot about the prospect, but Hustler was in here earlier saying the prospect's supposed to be pretty good. The third rounder turns into a second rounder, possibly. I thought the return overall, the price for these players wasn't exorbitantly high for skill. Again, we didn't trade any first rounders, and not saying Legwand necessarily was worth a first rounder, but he fits in quite seamlessly, I think, into Detroit. He's from Michigan, played in Plymouth for his junior career, can still skate, can move the puck through the neutral zone. I think this is a solid trade. You know, Detroit, obviously, Datsyuk's health in question. Zetterberg out probably through the first round.
Datsyuk shut down for 3 weeks today.
Right. So then, exactly. And you're talking about Steven Weiss, you know, what's going on there. So he solidifies your middle, and your middle is weak right now.
Yeah.
They could possibly, depending on the cap, but I assume Legwand would definitely consider playing in Detroit one, the scoring organization, after playing in Nashville for so long and playing in his home state.
Yeah, exactly. That's the key, Rich. He's American, and it's a little bit sad, I got to be honest, to see David Legwand leave Nashville because he was the first ever pick of that franchise. But, Drew, it was clear. David Poile was not re-signing him. Well, I shouldn't say that. I should say that the two sides couldn't agree on a contract. Not that I think Poile would re-sign him, but what I mean is I think it was clear that they weren't going to agree to a contract. So David Legwand gets to go to a team. Or is Detroit ninth right now? Eighth or ninth in the East, competing for a playoff spot.
They're ninth.
The standings change every 10 seconds, it
seems
like.
One point out of a playoff spot.
So he's going to a team. Nashville most likely isn't making the playoffs. They've been struggling as of late. So he goes to a team that probably has a better chance of making the playoffs. And as Richie mentioned, good opportunity for him. Steven Weiss is a big disappointment after signing that four-year deal. So he goes to a team where the opportunity is there, and it's good for him.
I thought that deal, you know, letting Foppola go and signing Weiss, I thought, was a good move. So far, that's not proven to be correct. We'll see what happens in time. But Nashville 6 points out of the playoffs. Like we said about the Jets, if they were that far out, you make this trade. You make
that's
trades
right.
Like we were talking about.
And last one before we quickly go to break. Dallas, they acquire Tim Thomas from Florida in exchange for Dan Ellis. And they also get a conditional fourth-round pick from Anaheim in exchange for Stefan Robidoux.
Well, I mean, Right. So you look at Jim Nill here, and he says, okay, I want to solidify my backup position because Ellis is great in the room. Everybody says he's great in the room, but just it's not performing at an NHL level. If he plays four games, we said on the show with Rick today, he plays four games, plays 80% of the games, or 20% of the games remaining.
Yeah.
That's significant based on the fact that you're chasing all these points.
What happens if Lehtinen goes down, though, and you get into the playoffs, though?
Well, Lehtinen goes down also, exactly, and he can play, and he solidified that. The Robida, he's not playing right now because he's hurt. He's coming back in mid-March. I like the move for Anaheim. It provides depth. They don't give up much. And for Dallas, they're trying to move on, and they're trying to acquire assets, and they're not giving up much. So I like the bounce. Jim Nill knows what he's doing there. That organization is going in the right direction and going in the right direction quickly.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we will look at the other trades still that were made earlier today in the NHL trade deadline. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I was able to make a trade that honored Marty's wishes to move on. I'm pleased that we were able to reach make a deal with the New York Rangers, which we feel is acceptable, and that allows us to move forward. I wish Marty nothing but the best of luck in his future to him and his family with the New York Rangers.
Tampa Bay Lightning general manager Steve Yzerman earlier today, after trading Marty St. Louis to the New York Rangers in exchange for Ryan Callahan, a 2015 first-round pick and a 2014 second-round pick. You know,
somebody's got to tell Stevie Yzerman he just won the gold medal.
He doesn't. That was almost like 3 weeks ago. You know, he's forgotten about that long ago at this point in time.
Stevie Yzerman, and I have a lot of respect for Stevie Yzerman. We're going to break down this trade and the dynamics in a second, but doesn't he just seem very uptight and miserable these days?
I think that
even at the Olympics, he never really seemed to let his guard down and enjoy the moment. Immediately after they won, he announced he wasn't coming back.
I think he knew he had the sword of Damocles hanging over his head this entire time.
Well, you know, let's
Drew,
talk.
It's funny because you have a sandwich of Tim Hortons hanging over your head right now.
And we'd like to thank Tim Hortons for providing us with the sustenance to get us through the show.
Absolutely, thank you, Tim Hortons. I can't thank you enough. I think
I've had five
donuts, and then during the break, I had a crispy chicken sandwich. It was great.
He's not joking, people.
let's talk about this trade, though. This trade is huge. You really can't downplay this. And there was a rumor, Richie, last week that this trade was going to go down.
Larry Brooks broke it last Sunday.
That's right. Brooks did break it. But there were so many moving parts. I didn't think it was going to get done. I really did think that at the last minute, not the last minute, but I thought that Callahan would sign a contract. Well,
His agent came down to 6.25. They came down to 6.25 for 6 years, I believe it was.
It was the no movement clause that supposedly Callahan was insisting on having a no movement clause. Right. The Rangers didn't want to give him that, and that seems to be the factor that ended up resulting in him being traded to Tampa Bay. Did the Lightning get enough for Marty St. Louis?
Well, you can't just ask the question open-ended like that, Drew. The problem is that he would only go to New York.
Right.
And Brian Lawton said when he was GM, he demanded a trade, too. And where did he demand a trade to? Only New York. So,
right, and
in a New York state of mind.
Right, and we know that he has a house that's around there, Connecticut and all that. But I think it's
these guys, a lot of them, though, have houses like everywhere.
Right,
they have a house in Florida. They have a house, But yeah, that is a fact.
There
his
was
family
that.
Is from yeah. His
right.
wife's from Connecticut, I believe.
Right.
They met in college.
And there's a history with Brad Richards.
History
with
Brad Richards, right. Yeah, of course. And
so Richie, you look at the trade, right? And you mentioned that there was only one trade that one team that St. Louis was willing to go to.
Return.
So you look at the return, you get the draft picks, and you get Ryan Callahan. Now, the big $65,000 question,
$64,000,
is he going to re-sign?
Well, I mean, you're talking about Callahan?
Sorry, is he going to sign, I should say.
Well,
and that's the big key. And, you know, Yzerman, you mentioned that he seemed miserable. And
he just seems miserable during the Olympics.
Yeah, but I don't think that he was really completely away from the situation with Marty St. Louis. And this, I was down there and we were all there when the team was announced, Team Canada I'm speaking about. And Marty St. Louis was noticeably upset, and that's fine.
Room. I mean, he said he was visibly.
The problem is, he made Team Canada after Stamkos didn't make it, and the fact that he has to. So you mentioned that, and he wins the gold medal, Steve Yzerman, and then he has to deal with the fact that now he has to trade Marty St. Louis. Understandably, he's not in the best mood. But back to really the trade, and I think that Ryan Callahan does add a different dimension to the Lightning. Now the Lightning, they're doing well. They've been in third and fourth in the Eastern Conference. He adds a different element, completely different players. Now, they have other players on the team that can probably make up the offense. But again, if Ryan Callahan doesn't re-sign, I should say sign, not re-sign, if he doesn't sign a long-term deal with the Lightning, my outlook on this trade completely changes.
I don't think the Lightning made this deal to expecting to sign Callahan to a long-term deal, though.
No, when you heard Callahan on TSN this afternoon, we played the audio with the interview with James Duffy, he didn't sound like a guy who's going to be signing, I don't think, anytime soon. He's going to go to free agency, and I'm sure he'll consider Tampa Bay's offer at that time. Tampa Bay gets back what they can. New York, they get back a first and a second. I think that's most important. The thing is, though, from New York's perspective, you're giving up first and second for a guy who's in his late 30s, but for a guy who won the Art Ross last year. So St. Louis takes your team from a kind of above, a little bit above average team to I don't want to play you in the playoff team. Really, when you look at their roster, McDonough and Staal and Girardi, now those guys are signed, and you have Lundqvist, and you have Richards, and not Richards isn't what he wants, but Richards and St. Louis, Nash, and Stepan. You're talking a different ball game now, guys. It changes the complexion of the squad.
Sort of a dark horse in the East now.
But they give up a lot for a short term, but the short term is such an impact, and it's next year as well, at least, and he can play longer based on the shape he's in, that I think both teams did fairly well here.
I think the East is, you know, the Rangers can look at the East, and, you know, everyone sort of puts Pittsburgh and Boston up on a pedestal, mm-hmm. and for good reason for the most part.
Yes.
But those are two teams that still have flaws. Boston did not address the fact that they lost Dennis Seidenberg and they have a hole in their top four of their defense.
Yeah, Mezeros is not going to do enough there.
Mezeros, who they acquired from Philadelphia in exchange for a third round draft pick, is not going to be the guy to fill Dennis Seidenberg's shoes.
Right.
Pittsburgh, we know of their defensive shortcomings and we know how they've flamed out in the playoffs the last couple years. The Rangers are looking at the situation and saying, you know what?
Same Montreal too, same thing.
Yeah,
you're right.
This, it's not, you know,
if it's on the West, like look at the West. You can't go through the West. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Any of the team competing for a playoff spot right now that's not 7 and up, and we had some 7 and up today, but if 7 and up, you don't have a chance.
You're right.
You're not going to win two series. One, absolutely maximum.
Yeah, but you're not going to win more than that. You're right. The top six in the West.
In the East, you could win three.
Yeah. There's no, I mean, you can certainly, it would not be the most stunning upset in the world if the Rangers came through the Metropolitan Division.
And if they went to the finals, it wouldn't be the most stunning upset. I mean, like, you look at their talent on paper, it wouldn't be the most stunning upset, and Vino's getting into it now. And
great goaltending.
Yep.
You know, great top four defense.
Yeah, the top three.
Yeah, okay, fine. But a pretty decent defense, and then the, you know, top six forward group that nothing to sneeze at with this addition. Other moves from the, you know, in regards to the Rangers, as we mentioned earlier, they got Rafael Diaz for a fifth round pick. That's just a depth defenseman.
Depth defenseman, yeah.
Yeah. The Tampa Bay Lightning, that was the only move they made, is the Marty St. Louis deal. We mentioned the Boston Bruins. They acquired Andre Mezeros for a third round pick from Philadelphia.
Yeah, they were interested in Chris Phillips, and there were other defensemen. But when you're talking about defensemen that are available on this trade market, Mezeros. Because Philly went out and they acquired Andrew McDonald, Mezeros was available. And Mezeros is a guy that he's got some offensive contributions, and he'll play. And again, you look at the Boston Bruins and where their strength is their four lines. And I think they have the best four lines still. And it's a good acquisition for them. And then after, as we know, Phillips was the main guy they were after.
As you mentioned, you know, Phillips, once they offered him 2 years, you knew Ottawa would get it done. So you look at, as he mentioned, it's exactly right, the market. We talked about Derek Morris on Saturday. Well, Phoenix acquires Erad. They're not trading Morris. They're going for it. Mm-hmm. At least to make the playoffs. So you look at the market. It's really McDonald. And McDonald gets traded. I'm really interested to see how he plays, but Boston's determined, I guess, the price for McDonald, at least we can deduce from what we've learned through all the reports, is that Philly, you know, made the best offer.
Philly got Andrew McDonald from the New York Islanders in exchange for a 2014 third round pick, a 2015 second round pick, and a centerman named Matt Mangini. I'm not familiar with him, but
Eric Mangini's son.
Spelled differently, but that's a good line anyway.
It's not a cheap price.
Mm-hmm.
But so you're basically giving up a second for McDonald as opposed to getting Mezeros. Mezeros, a guy who has talent, a guy Peter Chiarelli is aware of. I believe he was in Ottawa when Mezeros was in Ottawa, so he'd have some experience with him. But Mezeros cannot really stay healthy and hasn't been as dependable as he once was in Ottawa. So interesting to see if he maybe reverts back to old form. McDonald has been the better player than Mezeros recently, but the question is the second round pick. So the Eastern Conference might depend very much on how those two guys play out, because Philly certainly has talent to make a run too. And Boston needs a top four guy, and can Mezeros fill that top four when they're defending against Philly, New York, and all the other teams, you know, depends on how you get, if you get through your division. So right. you get through your division, even Toronto and Montreal, those teams can score. I mean, they have, certainly have offense.
Richie, you mentioned this earlier in the show, might have been off air, but really I think breaking down these trades, the Andrew McDonald trade, mm-hmm. the Andre Mezeros trade, even going back to some of the other trades, the Legwon trade, not really the St. Louis for Callahan trade, that trade was a little bit different, but what you're seeing is there really was more buyers and sellers, and what you're you're starting to see is actually a trade market, God forbid that I say this, it's actually pretty rational. You're starting to really see trades that are happening where, okay, yeah, this guy, you're acquiring him, he might be a rental, you give up a mid-round pick. I think this year, more so than any other year, possibly, it's tough to, for me to say this, I don't have the stats in front of me, but we've seen more trades involving draft picks from consecutive years. How many trades today involved a third-rounder from 2014 and a 2015 right. pick? And I think that's because you're not getting as many first-round picks. I think the days, guys, of the first-rounder for Paul Gostad are over.
And team
no offense to Paul Gostad,
but
I mean,
I agree.
The first round picks are coveted more now. I think.
And the GMs are more risk averse, I think, than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see many trades. They're not willing to take chances because their job's on the line.
That's just it. What general manager today made a deal that was the least bit risky? I mean, I would say, I don't know, Washington maybe trading Michael Neuwirth? But even
not
that.
Really. I mean, there's only 3-year age difference between Halak and Neuwirth. If people don't realize that. But.
Yeah. But I mean, there's nothing there that's, you know, I mean, Mark Bergevin getting Thomas Vanek.
No, it's not risky.
I think that's a very good deal. The dumbest trade that's been made all year
was Vanek.
But
you don't see many big trades. You don't see many guys willing to go out. Now, the St. Louis trade is a big, bold move.
Yeah. They're going for it.
But you saw one of those a year, basically.
That's right. They're going for it. They think that they're right there to win the cup. So that's the biggest.
I have concerns about St. Louis being able to create offense. Maybe people don't agree, but that's my concern.
Let's head to break. We'll come back. We'll look at some more of the deals that were made today. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. Pretty serious day in the hockey world. A lot of people change addresses, change homes.
We traded Drew yet?
We haven't traded me yet.
No, nobody will take him.
Richard Pollock's can bring some levity.
Yeah, we had
a very serious day.
Good day. In about 11:30 this morning, we interviewed Bill Waters, former assistant GM of the Maple Leafs.
You were on with Rick Ralph for the most of the morning.
Most of the morning for the Rona Roundtable.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about Bill Waters. Really interesting interview. Always has great stories. And we're winding up the interview, and he has a nice little zinger at Remus.
And we'll call you. I think we call you normally, or do we text you to come on?
Oh, no, Mike likes to call me because he says, did you see me with my girlfriend on TV?
Oh, that's right.
I'm not playing. I'm not replaying that one, Mike.
Bill Waters. Bill Waters talking about Remus's girlfriend.
Amazing.
Leah is probably amazing. The best thing ever.
That's not the first time.
Well, apparently you remember from last time. You didn't remind him this time.
No, I didn't even remind him. He brought it up. I think last time.
I think what it is, it's Leah and Bill Waters are on a texting relationship.
Oh, really?
In addition to Remus and Bill Waters.
Yeah, sure. That's exactly it.
That's amazing.
And then Rick later qualified that Remus and Leah are still going strong.
That's good.
So that's Bill Waters dropping Leah.
Well, this goes back to what I said. Michael Remus is
has a Kevorka.
The most popular guy on Winnipeg radio. People always come up to me and ask me, they're like,
no, they don't.
They ask me, you're friends with Remus? Like, Remus is the best. I work with a guy who was playing with Remus in the Mike Keane Classic.
Yeah.
He's always talking, oh, you sit up there with Remus.
Oh, with Remus.
with Remus. Like, now we're with Remus. So.
Sure, guys.
Yeah, it's Michael Remus and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from now on.
I'm not the one, you know, I'm just the one hitting the buttons here. You guys are doing all the talking.
Oh, that's right. Let's talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. They made a couple small moves today.
The moves.
We mentioned, actually, I do too, but they didn't.
And I'm worried.
Yeah. They didn't address what we thought they needed to improve on the back end.
I didn't say I like the moves. I didn't like the moves they didn't make.
The non-moves. Yeah, okay. They acquired Marcel Gotch from the Florida Panthers in exchange for a 2014 fifth-round pick, 2015 third-round pick, and then late in the day, they acquired Lee Stempniak from the Calgary Flames in exchange for a third-round pick.
You know, what you get when Gotch is you get a good defensive center, a guy who can win draws.
Good face-off guy.
And, you know, Crosby and Vitaly are the guys who they have draws there. Lefty, righty. Crosby's lefty. Vitaly, righty. Gotch is a lefty. He'll provide you some depth. Good defensively. And they might have to throw him to the wing. I'm not sure if he's played wing before, but I think he has. In Stepniak, you get kind of a tweener, right? A guy who's never really been your top six guy, but maybe on a bad team. But he can. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the flashiest guy. But he can give you 15 to 20 goals if given enough ice time. And if he ends up sliding in beside Mr. Crosby over there, then he might get 25 with his eyes closed.
Well, again, he's versatile. I've always liked Lee Stempniak. Of course, he was on the Leafs, and I believe he was part of the Phaneuf trade. Was he not
part of the Steen trade too? Yeah, he's
part of those, both those trades. Yeah. So Stempniak is a guy that goes from a top six role in Calgary to you mentioned playing with Crosby. That's the whole key, right?
Right.
So most likely, though, you ideally want him on the third line. But
no Dupuis.
But again, with no Dupuis, and you know, we talked about this a little bit before Jim Jameson came on, and Jim Jameson came on of the Vancouver Province about this. Pittsburgh was apparently very close to getting Kessler. So I mean, and that's a wing. Well,
what do they need him for?
Well, I mean, is he not an upgrade over Brandon Sutter?
Yeah, he's an upgrade over him. But the thing about that quickly is a center. Like, if he's playing center, he's not getting enough minutes. If he's playing wing, you're not putting him in his natural position.
Well, right. I don't think he plays wing. I think.
Well, then what do they do? Malkin or Crosby's playing wing then? Because otherwise, you're not getting him enough ice time.
Well, sure, but I think their intentions would be as a third liner, and yeah, you can make the argument that ideally you don't want him playing wing, even though he has played wing.
Right, he has.
And Tortorella was using him playing wing. But no, he's a natural center.
Right.
But the point being, I think they were trying to go for a little bit more, and they didn't get that. And that's probably why Leif Stempniak was acquired later. But, you know, you talk about the defense, just quickly, Drew, and Chris Letang had that unfortunate situation with his health. Paul Martin's had trouble with his health. That defense scares me.
Yes,
and this is the team that I picked as my Stanley Cup winner. But, you know, Olli Mäty has done a great job, and I've talked about Matt Niskanen. He's really improved as a defenseman since coming over from Dallas.
He has. He wasn't good defensively before. He's improved defensively.
And they've acquired Rob Scuderi and Brooks Orpik. But to me,
not as good as they once were,
those
two guys.
It's not the goaltending that concerns me, because Fleury's been great this year.
Yeah, but I don't trust them in the playoffs.
Okay, so. Well, I do. That's a topic maybe for when we preview the playoffs. Yep. But I think that, yeah, sure. In previous years, Fleury struggled. He struggled against the Islanders, and he struggled big time.
Disastrous against Philly.
He struggled against Philly, and I think that he's made it a point to get better, and he has been good this year.
Yeah.
The concern for me, and again, the reason why the Penguins have dried up over the past few years is the lack of scoring. And if Crosby and Malkin are scoring at the pace that they have, I think they're unbeatable. But that, to me, that's really, when you get down to the playoffs and the depth and all that, that's really what matters. And it's not just two guys scoring. You can't win, I should say, with two guys scoring.
The Penguins tried to go flashy last year with all their deadline acquisitions. It blew up in their face.
Yes.
This year, they just went depth. They went reasonable. They didn't, you know, and I think that they're necessarily going to win the East? They could. But, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they didn't. But they just went with very reasonable picks.
It's Mäty, Niskanen, Orpik, Englund, Scuderi, Bortuzzo. You got Martin coming back. Mäty obviously has been a huge addition, and Niskanen's improvement, but that's a lot to handle when you're up against the division that they're in. And it's not the West, but then with your forwards, sure, you can compensate, but, you know, as he mentions, confidence in Fleury. If he's great, that certainly is a big difference. If Fleury struggles with that defense in front of him, I just think, you know, why doesn't a team like that make, I'm not saying a guy's available, but why don't you make a run for a guy like Mark Giordano?
Well, you mentioned Giordano, but, you know, back to the forwards, Richie. I think for sure that they were interested in Vanek and they were interested in Molson. I think for sure.
Yeah, maybe, but do they need those guys as?
Well, we were just talking about the fact that they need someone to play with Crosby.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, do they need a guy of that guys of that level? Like, I don't think. I think you can put a moderately talented player beside Crosby, and he will perform like a top lead player on another team without Crosby.
Well, Pascal Dupuis was never a fantastic player.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
No, I mean, but I guess the point is, if you acquire Vanek, you're depleting assets. You're going to use, I would think, for a defenseman.
Yeah, I think they could have gone after a defenseman, too.
And I mean, the problem is, we talked about before, defenseman available, that's the issue. But that's what I'm saying, you know, Giordano, you go to Calgary and say, hey, you know, here's an offer for your top players. I'm just using an example.
Sure.
But that's the thing, when you're going into the playoffs, and your number one defenseman is who?
Right now, based on this play, it might be Olli Mäty, the way he's played this year.
Who'd you say is?
Their best all-around defenseman, it's not Olli Mäty. I mean, you're still going in there with Orpik and Martin. Those are your two best defensemen, Scuderi and...
and Niskanen, right?
Ole Matt has been playing first line minutes, but I don't think that he's you could say he's the number one.
Not just my concern when you're throwing him up there against Krejci, Bergeron, if you're playing against them in the conference finals, if you're playing up against Ginla and Lucic, can you handle that? This, you know, those combinations. I just think that's going to be a possible. It doesn't mean they can't make the run, but I have concerns about their D.
Quickly shifting back to the Western Conference, the Los Angeles Kings, they made two moves. They got Marianne Gaborik from the Columbus Blue Jackets in exchange for Matt Fratton, a second-round pick and a conditional third-round pick. They also got from the Buffalo Sabres Braden McNabb, Jonathan Parker, 2014 second-round pick and a 2015 second-round pick in exchange for forward Hudson Fashing and Nick Delorier. I don't know much about that second trade. Those are usually young guys. Is Marianne Gaborik the scorer that the Kings need to put them over the top in the West?
I hate when that's asked, put them over the top, but I mean, it improves the team, Drew. I don't think it puts them over the top. I mean, this is a really good team. Sure, yes, it's a team that struggled to score goals. It helps, and we've seen that players on this team that were really crucial in helping this team win the Cup have had tough years, and that starts with Dustin Brown, Justin Williams. He is an improvement over some of the guys that they've had. Tyler Toffoli is a guy that I really like. This team is still, in my opinion, a team that you don't want to play in the first round.
I agree.
Very good group of defensemen. Top five group of defensemen in the NHL. Quick's a top five goalie. And I think you still look at their team. Jeff Carter is still an excellent player. Mike Richards is still a guy that I'd have on my team any day. So I don't think it puts them over the top, but I think it helps address their goal scoring issues.
Let's address it. We'll address the rest of it on Saturday. We don't have enough time tonight.
Yeah,
Gaborik adds speed and scoring. We said that was a need on Saturday's show. I think it's a great addition, like Ezzy said.
And we'll see it tomorrow. The LA Kings will be in town against, of course, the Winnipeg Jets.
Oh, Gabrick's in tomorrow. Yes, that's right.
Gaborik tomorrow. LA Kings, Winnipeg Jets. 6 p.m. start time. Game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Coverage begins at 3 o'clock with Hustler and Lawless. That's it for us on this Wednesday edition of NHL Midweek. We remind you, Saturday morning, 8 a.m., it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Early start time, 8 a.m., as the Jets and the Senators play at 2 o'clock on Saturday. Big thank you to Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette and Jim Jameson of the Vancouver Province for joining us. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. In case you missed any of this show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on IllegalCurve.com, and of course on TSN1290.ca. For producer Michael Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Wednesday, it's NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.